Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, Eden.
Hi, Ione.
And hello to the listeners. Welcome to the Polyester Podcast. I'm Ione, and I'm the founding editor-in-chief of Polyester and the author of Poor Little Sick Girls.
And I'm Eden, I'm the managing editor of Polyester and the co-host of this podcast.
This is the Sleepover Club, a feminist pop culture podcast where we can impart the hashtag discourse in the hope of making some sense of it all.
Before we get started, please like, rate, review, and subscribe. Ione, do we have any reviews?
Yeah, we do. But they're in a different place. 5 stars getting me through. I'm dealing with a head injury and I'm not supposed to look at screens, so I've been making my way through this podcast while I rest. I like how fun and unpretentious this is. You talk about interesting things that I think about and flesh them out, and makes me laugh. Thank you, smiley face. That is by Hemily. Is that how you'd say it?
Yeah, Hemily.
Hemily in the UK. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We also have some very lots of exciting news today, actually.
We do.
We have just launched a new print zine. We're saying bye-bye to Girl Bosses in collaboration with Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creatives that we use to create our own website.
The zine features Dakota Schiffer, Nadine from Pussy Palace, and loads of other amazing people and creatives that we love. You can get your free copy in the episode description.
If they're not sold out.
I think they're not going to be sold out, actually.
But all of the content is also free to browse on the website. And my god, there's so many things.
And we've got Discord now as well, podcast Discord. If you like the podcast, you can sign up for $250 a month. You can join the Discord with me, Ione, and lots of other polyester girlies and gals and guys and everyone in between, and you can chat to us and it's fun.
Yeah. What are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about the writer's strike.
It's pretty confusing for me.
Really? Oh my god, when I was studying the research, I was like, I'm so sorry, the research was like so dense.
I was reading the research and I just don't understand it.
So many numbers.
So the writers are on strike, as in, go on, tell us about it, Eden.
The writers have gone on strike because... we're going to sound so stupid in this episode.
Why?
Because we don't actually understand the ins and outs, the technical terms, or like. But basically, there was a dispute about writers' pay being increased because the use of AI is now rampant everywhere, and also streaming services have completely changed the way that the writing world works, and nothing has really been disputed for like a couple of years about these kind of things. And when they wanted to talk about AI, the basically, not the union, but the people that are in charge of like increasing people's wages and stuff. Can't remember the called.
Like the execs, they said executives.
No. Yeah, they were like, we're not going to dispute this. Like, we don't want to talk about it, and that's why those people have gone on strike, because they're like, well, it needs to be discussed.
So, yeah, there is. So what is a writer's strike? So let's just start at the beginning. A writer's strike is all TV and film writers are on strike.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as. So there's no new scripts being written, there's no new scripts being sold, being put into production. A lot of productions are halting.
Yeah, what's the Severance? Oh, the person that wrote that fucking headline. Get a grip. Person that wrote something.
Severance has been severed.
Oh, I was like, do you think you're funny?
Why?
It's just annoying because it's like, you know, people's jobs are, not people's lives are at stake. People's jobs are at stake. And also, I really like Severance, so I'm really looking forward to the new season. But yeah, Severance has been severed from production. So following the writer's strike and rumours of drama behind the scenes, they halted production indefinitely because they haven't even, like, begun to finish writing the story.
So, well, exactly. A lot of productions are shutting down, not because they don't have the scripts ready, but kind of in, like, solidarity, or they're saying that, you know, the writing doesn't end when the script is finalised. Like, a lot of stuff happens between them and there. A lot of, like, little changes are made on set, and so a lot of productions are just not moving forward. For example, like, did you see Succession has, like, books of its scripts?
Does it?
Yeah, I saw someone shared a, like, screen grab, and it was the end scene of season 3 where, spoiler, Tom puts his, like, hand on Shiv and is like, you okay? And it's not that in the script. Like, that happened on the day with, like, changes from the writers and from the actors.
Yeah.
So it's basically, like, none of that can happen now, obviously. But what I thought was really interesting is that the WGA, which is the Writers Guild Association, doesn't just span TV. It's also radio, streaming news, online media, non-fiction podcasts, non-fiction TV, and public TV.
Mm.
So those people can stay working, but they can't sell any scripts or options to a company that isn't.
So it's like limiting you, even if you're not on strike?
Yeah. And because of, like, the nature of the business, it means you're just not getting paid. Like, these people don't have contracts with, you know, they don't have contracts with Netflix specifically. Like, they're working job to job kind of thing. It's so
freelance, I guess.
Yeah, like, kind of like freelance. Well, it is freelance, isn't it? Unless you're, like, even if you're consigned to, like, full show, though, because that'll stop, your pay will stop.
Yeah. But then the interesting point that loads of the stuff brought since the last strike is that TV has changed so much. Like, TV series are shorter, and, like, just everything's changed. Like, streaming has redefined everything. Like, you can't just write a 20-season show on, like, a cable network and just, like, live off that.
Exactly. Well, a lot of it has to do with residual. Well, last time a lot of it had to do with residuals, and it has to do with streaming residuals this time, right? Yeah. So a residual is, like, a payment you get if something re-airs.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, Leighton Meester, she will get residuals.
Gossip Girl, God's on break.
She will get residuals from Gossip Girl if it then airs on HBO, like, as in HBO, the channel, because HBO Max have it now. I know Gossip Girl was a CW show in the day. But then, because of streaming, that changed how residuals happened. Because you can't just get, because there's no such thing as reruns anymore, right? Well, there is, but as in no one watches live television.
Yeah, because people, they didn't count people, like, rewatching stuff on Netflix or rewatching stuff on streaming sites. So that got rid of that kind of source of income, I guess.
Yeah, so that applies to actors, writers, pretty much anyone that's been involved in a production. Anyway, it is very meaty, complicated. We're probably not the best people to explain.
We don't know.
Up the striking workers, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But I think what is most interesting is, like, how it affects culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
indeed.
Because I feel like also with a writer's strike, so 2007 was, well, the first writer's strike that we were alive for was the 1998, was it? Or was that 1988? Okay, I wasn't alive then. Sorry.
That might have been about, like, the introduction of cable TV. I'm not sure. I'm not very well versed in the 1988 writers' strike.
The long and the short of it is that entertainment industries are really shit at catching up with advancements in their industry seem to, like, never see it coming. And then they're like, oh.
Like, they're fucking striking about streaming sites that have been around for, like, fucking 10
years. 12 years, yeah, if not longer. So they're really, like, slow to accept advancements, but obviously that works in their favour because they're paying the people that actually make the shows less, and the executives and the networks end up getting more. Like, I think there was a stat that you put in, you put in your research. So according to the WGA's calculations, industry profits have ballooned from $5 billion in 2000 to $28 to $30 billion from 2017 to 2021, which is just bananas.
But no one's wages have gone up.
No one's wages have gone up. Like, with inflation, any rise in wage still actually counts as a 14% pay cut.
Right. You can see why people are annoyed.
I feel like most people are kind of au fait with striking since it's all that's been going on in the UK for the past year.
Yeah.
Like, this is happening across every single industry. Like, it's the same with nurses, doctors, train people.
Mm-hmm. Trains.
If you work in a train, that's happening to you. But it's obviously interesting because, like, you wouldn't... Obviously, film and TV is a massive industry, but as in, like, it's nowhere near the same here as it is in America. So I feel like it wouldn't really... It would have an effect here, but not the same effect.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a huge cultural impact, like Pete Davidson going and giving pizza. And then did you see then someone really embarrassing tried to go with donuts to, like, be the nice guy? I can't remember, but it's someone really embarrassing, like, not cute, like Pete. And everyone was like, right.
I mean, the support has been there.
And then did you see Mandy Patinkin?
Yeah, I love him.
Yeah. Giving a very Lynchian quote.
Yeah.
You know, there's that David Lynch quote that's like, fix your heart or die.
What did he say?
He was like, these are the beating heart of our industry. We love them. No, these are the people that write the stories that make our hearts beat.
Wow.
Very Nicole Kidman for AMC.
Yeah. But then you think, if you'd be pissed off if you lived in Hollywood and you're literally being treated as like, a joke, not like a joke, but like, you're part of one of the biggest industries in America and you're like on like pittance. And also, when like the writers provide jobs for like so many more people as well, like everyone that works on that show, like lighting, runners, production, like costume, it's like, I know that the show,
or even like catering,
yeah, the show isn't just created with a writer, but like the ideas of them, pretty much, like you'd be livid. I think they have every right to strike. We support them.
Woo, woo, woo. But, so, I got Eden to unearth this, like, pop bitch three-parter.
Oh, my God. Because it's
literally think about it all the time. Even, I did an interview with one of our upcoming cover girlies and was talking to her about it. Because, I mean, when I saw it on the internet, it literally just blew my mind.
I had to pay £3 to read this. It's worth every single penny. It's so good. Like, when you said this to me last night, I was like, oh, my God, this is one of the best things I've ever read. And I'm, you know, a conspiracy theorist, and it's about a conspiracy theory that the writer's strike in 2007 is responsible for Donald Trump becoming president in 2016. But it's not a conspiracy because every single thing
it's accounted
in
for.
It is true and accounted for. It's fucking bananas. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I went so deep down the rabbit hole, but it's amazing.
Well, obviously in 2007, we were 13, right?
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a formative time for us in terms of television as well. And I didn't, when I was really looking over this and stuff, obviously we didn't have the Celebrity Apprentice here, or I didn't watch it, so why'd I watch something like that when I was 13 years old? But so much of the reality, like so much of the TV is reality TV that is like formative to us growing up.
Big Brother.
Because of the writer's strike. But even like the OC and then Laguna Beach and The Hills probably came out of it in some way. Like semi-scripted, non-scripted game shows, like The Apprentice type elimination shows all came from TV execs turning around and going like, well, we have to make something. Like we're not just going to stop.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. Would you like to run us through the theory, Eden?
Yeah, okay. Okay, you're ready for the theory. It actually started, I mean, this the Pop Bitch thing, it's called A Tale of Two Strikes, it's on Pop Bitch. It's dense, like, you know, it's very, very long. But basically, reality TV started because it's cheaper to produce than anything else. So when there wasn't anyone writing, so it starts in 1988 with the writer's strike then. Fox News had just started 2 years before that, so they were, like, in the shit. They were like, we need to find a hit because we're competing with those three other big networks in America. I can't remember who they are. it was, like, CNN. I didn't write it down. Anyway, Fox News were trying to compete with the big three, or the three big networks in America. They just launched 2 years before, so they were like, we need a hit. Then this guy... who was like a documentary maker, but he was trying to make like shock documentary stuff. He had the idea of Cops, where he was like, Cops, there's no script, there's no script writers, we don't need a voiceover, we don't need storyboarding, and then we just film real life. And the premise is that like, America's not going to stop doing crimes, so we're going to have like endless material to work with. It was a massive hit. because it was very, it was the format is just like the police officer finds the bad guy, then charges the bad guy, and then that's it, and then we move on to the next one. It's pretty, you know, it's easy to twist that narrative as well and make, well, loads of people were complaining because it made the cops look like more competent than what they actually were. But it was a huge hit. 30 years later, it's like the longest running series in history.
And there's so much of that in the UK, like 911, What's Your Emergency? All of those.
24 Hours in Police Custody.
24 Hours in A&E.
24 Hours in A&E. Traffic Cops.
Yeah. It's like all those TV channels on Freeview, like Gold.
Dave, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Friday night in like bloody Loughborough Town Centre.
Yeah.
Trying to see if we can get some, gang up some ruffians. But like, but it's just, it writes itself because people are always going to be doing illegal shit. Then, so that's like kind of set the basis for reality TV. Then The Apprentice comes along, and I didn't know this. The Apprentice, the Donald Trump one was before the Alan Sugar one.
I kind of guessed, but I didn't know.
Yeah, no, yeah, it was. They did a year of the Donald Trump one,
yeah,
and then the Alan Sugar one came a year later.
Mm.
The Apprentice, I'm sure everyone listening knows what The Apprentice is, but it's just a reality TV show about business people that when you get to the end of it, you get £100,000 to set up your own business. It's very funny. Just like idiot business people. But Donald Trump was on that.
He was the, like, the Alan Sugar, so like the person you'd end up being the apprentice of, like being the intern for. And it really wasn't doing very well, mm-hmm. apparently. So just before the 2007 writer's strike, was it?
Yeah.
So just before the 2007 writer's strike, they were going to nix it. And then suddenly, like, the writer's strike happened. They had nothing to put on their network, and they still had Trump in contract for a year. So they said, okay, well, why don't we just do Celebrity Apprentice? It became a huge hit. And, like, loads of the article goes into as well how it kind of really cemented Trump as a competent businessman, even though he really wasn't.
Yeah. Well, he was struggling himself in business, you know, he had to, like... He was basically relying on his name to, like, brand everything, but he wasn't doing that well financially. But obviously they were like, well, we'll fluff your ego, make you look like a competent businessman. And he was like, okay, cool. So the reason why people think that he is because this fucking reality TV program made it look like he was when he wasn't.
Yeah, he was rehabilitated through reality television.
It's fucking crazy. And to think that, like, if he's just said the sentence, reality TV.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
He is responsible for Trump becoming president. You sound like a crazy person, but or you sound like you're a fantasist. But this is so in depth that it, like, all the steps are there. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy that they basically repackaged and, like you said, rehabilitated Trump in the public eye to make him seem like he was a competent businessman, and that, like, made people believe in him when he wasn't at all.
And before we, like, trash reality TV, here to say I love reality television. Me too. I love a lot of reality TV. I think it is a, you know, valid form of television.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I think it's a very valid art form, lol. But another really good point that's in your research, and I think it's in, yeah, it's in the Popbitch stuff, I think, where it's basically talking about how reality TV is kind of to blame for our breaking down of reality.
Of, yeah, fake news.
And, like, knowing real from fake, yeah. Knowing constructed versus non-constructed. I wish this interview with the person that I interviewed was out, because they made really, really good points. But it will come out soon.
Ah.
They made, like, really, really good points about it. It was like, what? Sorry.
It's going to be good.
I'm absolutely just cock-teasing you all. But it is really interesting because, yeah, it's basically charting how, like, reality TV made us believe that characters were real people as well. So then, like... Mm. At some point, obviously, post-2007 writer's strike, when reality TV was booming, they then did bring writers in the room. And it became constructed reality. Yeah. So, for example, like, one obvious example of this is, like, Paris Hilton and The Simple Life. Mm. Like, only this year she's dropped her baby voice.
Yeah.
Also, there's just so many others. Like, remember, like, it's one of the main things that's in my brain stuck forever is, did you watch The Hills?
Yeah, you know, I dabbled.
At the very end of The Hills, where they zoom out, and it's Brody Jenner, and he's, like, saying bye to Lauren or someone, mm-hmm. I don't know, and it's a set, like, it's yeah. a whole set, and it's like...
yeah.
The
reveal behind the curtain moment.
That it was all fake.
Yeah. I remember Nail Varnish Gate on The Hills.
What's that?
Where Lauren was having a conversation on the phone, and she was, like, she was having this big old drama with Heidi, and she's on the phone, and she's, like, crying... And then there's a cut, and then she's on the phone again, but her nails aren't painted anymore. So it's, like, a very clearly, like, it's a very heavily edited conversation that they've then, like, refilmed, like, the part of the conversation, because she had a completely different, like, manicure on. Oof. So they've come back, like, maybe, like, they've got the story at the end of the season, and they've been like, can I need to cause some more drama? Do you want to come back and we'll film this conversation again with you and Heidi, and you can cry more or whatever? And yeah, people were... I think it was on The Hills, so it was, like, the nail varnish moment where people clocked that... They just completely edited this whole comment. They made it look like it was on one day, but it wasn't at all.
So this is how reality TV is an art form, right? Because, like, no, but the thing is, I feel like if someone said to me, obviously I'm not really, like, an actor or a performer, and a lot of people that go into reality TV are, like, Chriselle from Selling Sunset was an actress before she went into real estate and went on the show. But, like, if someone said to me, oh, can you just recreate your argument with this person with the same, like, zing? No, I'm not angry anymore.
But sometimes you can tell them, like, Drag Race. Like, they'll be like, I came here to slay the competition. And, like, they've edited, like, 10 different sentences together to make it look like they're saying, like, the one thing. But their tone of voice is, like, so different. Like, people have found out sometimes the disparity between, like, one word in the sentence and the other word in the sentence is, like, fucking mental.
So the 2007 writer's strike birthed A, Trump as president.
Mm.
B, reality TV as we know it, which is tons of it, everything all the time, from more documentary style to the Kardashians.
Yeah.
What are you going to say?
And Piers Morgan and Alex Jones both became famous off the back of the 2007 writer's strike. Basically just birthed some of the worst shit we've known.
Which is why it's really interesting to... like, ponder how culture will change in this, like, new writer's strike, I feel. Because, A, we hate waiting for TV now. Like, we do it for Succession. I mean, we barely do it for anything else. Like, Yellow Jackets literally, like, steamrolled out that new season. Mm. Like, things are really steam. Even us saying about Severance was out a year ago, and we're already like, oh, yep. Can't believe it's been halted. Like, Stranger Things... when it took that, like, 3-year break or whatever, no one cared about it anymore.
Yeah.
And then it came back and it was really good. So, like, people actually liked it because it was good. But I couldn't tell you what happened in season one of Stranger Things with a gun to my head. Like, I could not tell you. The school, something.
Barb died? Is she called Barb?
Who the hell's Barb?
Barb with the glasses.
She was in something else and died in that as well.
God, she didn't have a
good show. So, yeah, But I think another really interesting advancement that's happened since the 2007 writer's strike is self-produced content. So, like, for example, Chicken Shop Date with Amelia de Moldenberg, like, all of these people that are basically already producing, making, creating, cutting and distributing their own TV probably aren't union members. Like, I don't know if they are or not, but like, I think it's a really interesting case study to look at, like, Z-Wave, for example, next to Amelia, like, not in any sort of weird competitive way, but as in, like, Z-Wave went with a network, her show's now been cancelled, Amelia did it, kept doing it herself, and is, like, still
smashing it.
Yeah. So, like, instead of, is this just going to prevent people from even, I don't know, like, A, networks could just go to YouTubers, content creators, and people that are making stuff on TikTok and give them shows, is one possible outcome, I think.
But that wasn't an option in 2007.
Really. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. This is going to birth a new era of culture. Because, like, unfortunately, the wheel's not going to stop, do you know what I mean? People are still going to want stuff to put on television.
Yeah.
For as long as this goes on. Obviously, what should happen is they reach the deal and all our TV shows come back next week and we all have a lovely time and nothing changes. But that's not really their historical precedent. Like,
no.
It's gone on for quite a long time for both of the times. It's 100 days in 2007. And it's 5 months in the 80s.
How long has it been now?
2 weeks.
Well, look at what happened when it was, like, COVID. Like, proper, like, full-on lockdown COVID. They were putting, like, the most random shit on TV. They put on the 2012 Olympic opening ceremony because there was, like, nothing else to put on TV. Like, so we kind of experienced, like, a drought of culture, like, in 2020.
But could you not, probably not, but, like, you could argue that that's created the, not Amelia, she's different, but as in, like, that's created the, that created TikTok, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
So then surely the next logical step of that is TikTok creators having their own shows on actual telly.
Yeah, it'll go full circle.
Yeah.
This is what's going to rise up into the gap, though, isn't it? Like, with the last one, it was reality TV. Now it's
one step
TV
further.
On our phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That won't be on our phones anymore.
They'll be on the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said before about, as well, about reality TV making us unable to distinguish between reality and fiction, or what's real and what's fake, because a lot of the striking is about AI as well, and the introduction of AI and how that's not been addressed, and that AI, does AI get credit when it helps to write a TV show, and all these kind of wild questions that we don't even really know the answer to is also behind the strike.
Right, this is obviously me being like smooth-brained as fuck, yeah, but I just don't think AI is gonna, like, I think obviously they'll try and make AI write scripts. We're underestimating how much, like, there's lots of, for every Severance and Succession and The Last of Us, there's what, like, 15 to 20 bad things. Yeah. Those writers obviously still deserve jobs, like, fine, of course they do. You don't deserve to be unemployed just because you're bad at your craft.
Just because you try to write, I don't know, like, Modern Family episodes or something.
What's wrong with Modern Family?
Sorry. That's fucking AI generated comedy. But when you think about something that's like a Hallmark film or like a Christmas film or something that would be very regimented in like the structure or like even like a rom-com, you could fucking get AI to write that.
I saw a tweet the other day and it was just literally so accurate, and I think this is why I'm finding AI hard to like get into my brain, is that AI is not a... It's not AI. It's not intelligent. You feed it in content, it feeds you out content. Like, it doesn't create anything. It's just an amalgamation of things. It's like, it's a, what's it called? Like a learning tool.
Yeah.
The more it learns, the better it gets because you're feeding it information constantly.
Mm.
And obviously we have like lots of good information to feed it. So you could feed AI like the Titanic and it'll come out with the Titanic but on a plane. Like, yeah. That's where we're at. We're not at the point where it's thinking of, like, you know, it's not thinking of amazing concepts.
But for a lot of media, it doesn't need to think of something amazing. It just needs to think of, like, trash. Like, it could be, like, it could easily write a script for, like, a Netflix Christmas film that people are going to watch once and move on with. And we did an episode about this as well, about anti-intellectualism and about how the high and the low is kind of widening and the middle is getting bigger because there's just, like, so much rubbish out there.
A lot of the negotiations are literally about not trying to eliminate AI, but trying to establish writers' rights within AI. So, for example, like making sure they get fair pay if they're editing an AI script or adapting an AI script or like blah, blah, blah. There's that viral tweet going around at the moment, though. Have you seen it? It's like, if the computers keep making art and the people keep doing the manual labor, that isn't the future we want.
Dream of something better.
Yeah.
Yeah, people do get a bit soft about it, don't they? But yeah, I guess like what Mandy Patinkin said, AI is not going to make something that's going to make our hearts beat. But a lot of culture
doesn't make our hearts beat.
Doesn't necessarily require that. Yeah, they just it's just there to be, you know, some chaff. This isn't a very positive episode. I'm really sorry. Also, me and Ione are in the room together for like the first time
ever.
Recording. Yeah. If it sounds different.
Can you tell? It's very. We're anxious.
We are, yeah.
It's like the first date.
It really is. I felt really nervous. So, what do you think? What's the closing thoughts?
My closing thoughts are, I generally think that AI is going to, something bad's going to happen with AI. Like, something terrible is going to happen. As in, nothing bad, but I genuinely don't see it. But maybe I'm just small-brained.
Mm.
I don't see it as the big, like, technological advancement that it's made out to be. Like,
okay.
I do wonder why we are using tech for that. Like, do you remember when... This is such a stupid thing to say. Do you remember when they first introduced like self-checkouts and everyone went fucking mental? Like everyone literally lost their minds.
Mm.
But now we're just like, oh, a computer can talk, but it can't actually talk. So let's just, you know, let's just push this down here. But like, why aren't we giving them just really boring jobs? Like lots of people want to be a writer. Not many people want to like, I don't know, draft. I don't know. I don't want to put down anyone's jobs.
No, we don't. But I mean... The self-checkout thing, they could just get rid of everyone's jobs with them though as well. I always feel guilty. I always go and use the person. Then I think, do they want me to go to them or would they rather me use self-checkout? I don't know.
Basically, there obviously needs to be lots of discussion as to how we use tech. I think, I think personally, as someone with absolutely no experience as a screenwriter, but I would like to...
Hello!
No experience as a screenwriter is that... What it seems like is that the industry has been so behind on so many other technological advancements that it's trying to get ahead on this one without knowing how it'll play out, which isn't bad. Like, writers should secure as many rights as they can before it gets bad.
Yeah.
If it does. But I just feel like we might all be a bit like, oh, remember that summer we were all obsessed with ChatGPT and then we never used it again.
Yeah.
It's like fucking, what's that, Smart Friend? What was it that was on MSN?
Smart Child.
Smart Child. We literally had this 12 years ago, a smarter child.
We literally did, yeah. Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I feel very one of two ways, because I feel like such like an analogue person. Like, is that what the word is? When you like want to do things in your life? Like, whenever I go into a restaurant, there's a QR code. I would catch me never using a QR code. I was going mental at Jeannie the other day because we went into a bar and she was like, I'll just use a QR code. I was like, no, you should go and speak to a real person. And then she went up to the bar and they were like, can you use a QR code, please? But I just think like, I am against it, but then I'm all for it as well. It's going to make people's jobs easier.
We need responsible digitization,
yes.
I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's obviously what the strikers are trying to do, so I support it.
But you said this as well when we did the AI selfies one, that this should have been conversation 10 years ago. There should have been a standardized minimum wage. It should have been like, before these things appeared, there should have already been something put in place to ensure that people had job security.
Universal income now. I think ultimately, if like an AI can write a shitty Netflix film, that then someone can go in and script edit, make the same money they would have gotten from writing it. I want to see everyone's lives being easier.
Yeah.
And I just don't, like, obviously the world bends towards exploitation.
Mm.
So we need to ensure that's not the case, which is what's happening. So
we need to exploit the machines, not let them exploit us. No, I think what you said is probably what's going to happen. Like, a computer will, you know, whiz up a little script and then someone will go in and humanize it.
Yeah.
But they need to get paid for that. We support the strike. Join a union.
And I also... One thing I haven't seen, which I would like to hear from anyone who knows, is, like, how do you actually support the writer's strike? Like, how do you support it?
Go out into the street with a sign.
In London?
Yeah.
Look out to fucking Elm Street or whatever it's called. Go outside where they're filming Wicked.
Yeah.
Ariana, what are you doing here?
Go outside of the Smalling building with a start protesting about film.
They're all protesting something else.
Maybe that's another episode. Maybe me and Ione should do a morning television episode. Oof. Put all the morning television drama.
Oof.
If you don't live in the UK, you probably don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Eden.
Thanks, Ione.
Thank you to the listeners. Thank you to Olivia for editing. Thank you to Gina and Gina, Charlotte, Grace, Hattie and Misha. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.